Yeah, I can. Okay. So, to start off, where did you grow up?
Well, I was born in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and I lived in Philadelphia till I was 13 years old. And my mother and sister and I moved from Philadelphia to Culver City, California. And I pretty much grew up in Culver City up until the time I was 18. And then when I was 18, I went in the Marine Corps.
And then, how long have you were you in the Marine Corps?
I was in the Marine Corps for 4 years active duty and then 4 years reserves.
And then was the Vietnam War that you were in?
Yes.
What did you do while you were participating in that?
I was in a unit called Reconnaissance Battalion for the 1st Marine Division, and we would go out and in small groups, we'd go out in 4 or 6 man teams, and we would look for bad guys. We would look for North Vietnamese or Viet Cong, and we would observe them and either report back on what we were seeing, or if we were given the green light, we would call in artillery and airstrikes on them.
Kind of like a spy.
It's kind of like a spy, but you're not really doing anything undercover, like in plain clothes and stuff like that. We would use unconventional weapons. We would use stuff that's not normally issued to the Marine Corps, and we would use sometimes we would wear Marine Corps uniforms, and sometimes we would wear South Vietnamese uniforms. And our mission was usually to go out and find the bad guys and get out of there without them ever knowing that we were there. But occasionally we would go out there and we would be found, and there would be a fight. And then we'd also go out there on occasion looking for a fight. We would go out there and try and ambush people and try and capture people and things like that.
Is there any time during all that that is really emotional, but also like happy emotional? Like, I don't know.
Well, whenever you look at stuff, you try and remember all the good things. And I had some negative things happen over there. I got a Dear John letter from a girlfriend, and that was pretty upsetting. And we lost a friend who was in our group, and that was pretty upsetting. But then again, we had some good times. We had a lot of good laughs. We formed a really, really close bond, probably more close than most families have, family members. And I have friends that if I saw them today, we would pick up right where we left off, and we would still be talking about the things we used to do.
So it's like a family, like.
It's I think it's even closer than family. You're at a point sometimes where your life depends on what they do, and their life depends on what you do, and you know what they're going to do before they even do it, and they know what you're going to do before you do it.
Yeah, so it's like they know your mind better than you know yourself.
They have a pretty good judgment, and I did on them too. And when you go out with a 4 or 6 man team, and you're miles and miles away from the closest friendly forces, then you better be able to rely on the people that you're with, and we can do that.
Are there any funny stories that you like to tell from back then?
From being in the Marine Corps or from being in overseas?
Both.
We did some stupid things. Guys always dare each other to do things. And one time we were on a mountaintop, and we were supposed to be looking for bad guys. We were in an observation post, and we weren't supposed to be seen or known about or whatever. And so anyway, as guys, you know, say they can do things better than the other guy. I can do this and I can do that. So one guy had a grenade launcher, a 40-millimeter grenade launcher. And this is a high-explosive grenade. It's a 40-millimeter grenade.
Oh, Jesus.
And he says, I can shoot this grenade launcher straight up in the air, and the shell will come straight back down and hit exactly, you know, right where I'm at right now. He says, I'm good. I'm not good with that weapon. And nobody, no, you can't do that. You can't do that. And he said, well, watch this. And boom, he fired it straight up in the air.
Oh, God.
We all looked at each other and go, boom, and we went off in four different directions. We had no idea where this thing was going to come down. And it has a kill radius of, you know, 5 meters. So,
oh, my God.
So we had no idea where it was going to go. And it ended up exploding about 50 yards from where it was shot from. And none of us got hurt, but we had to, you know, because of the explosion and everything else and all the running around we did, we had to pack our stuff up and get out of there before the bad guys came looking for us.
Dang.
So that was a stupid thing to do.
Showing off.
Yep, showing off. And then back in the United States, I believe I told you a story before, we were at the pool, and we had a bunch of Boy Scouts come, and they asked us what we could teach them, because we were a very specialized unit and stuff, so we told them we could put together a slide for life, which is kind of like a zip line is what you call it now, and we had a 30-foot tower at one end of the pool, and then, 4 foot at the other end of the pool.
Kind of like a treehouse, but...
Yeah, it's like kind of like that. But it's the pool is 30 feet deep, or I'm sorry, it's 20 feet deep.
Oh my God!
Right underneath the tower. The tower is 30 foot high.
Oh.
And so we made a zip line up there. We ran all these kids down the zip line, down the slide for life. And at the very end, the guy that I was with, he was my point man on my team, and he says, Bill, we have a problem. I said, well, what do you mean you got a problem? He says, well, we got a problem with the kid over here. I said, well, send him up here. It's not like he doesn't have any goddamn arms or something. Send him up. And he says, Bill, turn around. So I turned around, and sure enough, there's this kid. And he's got arms that are about, you know, 6 inches long. Mm-hmm. And so I really felt like a jerk, and I said, well, how do you want to do this? Do you want to? And the funny thing about it is he had to go up a ladder that was straight up and down, not like a slanted ladder, or not mm-hmm. like a stairway up. Or he had to go up a ladder that went straight up and down. The way
that's scary.
Really scary. It's scary to go up just regular, you know, climbing up it. But he got a friend on each side, and those friends linked arms around his back. And he climbed up using his feet, and they had their arm linked around him, and they'd go up one run at a time all the way up to the top. So it was really dangerous to do. But he got up there, and I asked him, well, you know, how do you want to do this? Do you want to go down here? And he said, yeah. He said, I really do. So I said, okay. Well, I tied a triple bowline, which is it's a knot that has three big loops in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I put a loop through each of his legs. He put his legs through the two bottom loops. And then the top loop I put around his chest up underneath his arms and tightened it up. And hooked a carabiner, a snap link, onto the line.
So that's how, like, when he got to the bottom, it would, like, he'd be able to come off?
He wouldn't be able to come off. They would catch him at the bottom.
Oh, okay.
And that's what they did. And it he ran right down to the 4 foot
section.
Oh, so
the plane goes into the water.
Yeah.
Okay, I was confused about that, because I thought he fell into the water.
Yeah, he went all the way down to the end, and they caught him and, you know, unhooked him down there.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was, I thought it was just a tremendously brave thing for that kid to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad I had the opportunity to help him do that.
Yeah, I can definitely imagine how hard that would be, especially for just everyone in the situation, because they're about this time there were a lot of kids with disabilities. I even remember having to do something in kind of that same situation where I said something and then I regretted it later. But yeah. Sad stories out of the way. What was it like coming home after you were done with all that stuff? Like,
when I was coming home from overseas.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little disappointing. I didn't have the experience that some guys have where people, you know, were saying bad things about at the airport and spitting on them and stuff like that. I didn't have that experience. I ended up flying back to March Air Force Base in San Bernardino, and I was hoping to be met by my girlfriend and, you know, some of my friends, but my mother and sister, who I was estranged with, I didn't live with them before I went to the Marine Corps. I had tried to make arrangements with them to contact my friends, and they just decided that my sister was going to meet me, and so that was very frustrating. You know, return home, I didn't get the reception I was hoping for.
Mm-hmm.
To see my girlfriend after a year and all that stuff. So, and it was the same girlfriend that had actually written me a Dear John letter. So, I was hoping to try and patch things up with her before or when I got back, and she wasn't there. So, because my sister didn't tell them that I was coming home.
So she thought that you died?
No, she didn't think I died. She just my girlfriend. She knew I was going to be coming home, but she didn't know when.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't able to communicate a lot back and forth at that time. And I ended up telling my sister the date and the flight that I'd be on and all those things. And I asked her to tell my girlfriend and tell, you know, a few of my friends or whatever,
mm-hmm.
That I'd be coming back. And they decided not to tell them. And so it was just my sister there at the airport.
That's a little messed up.
Yeah, I thought so too.
What exactly is a Dear John letter? Because I've never heard that term before.
That's where a girl breaks up with you when you're overseas, or when you're away.
So they gave it a name.
Oh yeah, it kind of originated in World War II, and you know.
Well, the guy's named John.
Yeah, poor, you know, Dear John, you know, it goes downhill from there. Well, that's, you know, that was what I got. It was a Dear Bill letter at the time.
Oh, that's so sad. But that brings me to my next question. How did you meet Grandma?
Okay. Grandma, I was a policeman at the time, and I was working in with the Los Angeles Police Department. I was working in West LA up by UCLA.
Was this after military?
Yeah, I was. I got out of the military in 1974. I stayed in the reserves until 1978, but I got out of active duty in 1974 and went on the police department. And about a year later, I was working in Westwood. Well, I was assigned to the Westwood Village area, which is kind of like up around UCLA. But the Westwood Village, or the West LA Division, goes from all the way from the beach to the boundaries of Watts, in LA. So I was a young, aggressive policeman. I was putting a lot of bad guys in jail.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd been working all week long, working all night long, and then ended up going to court every day that week. And one of the guys, as I was getting off work, he met up with his girlfriend and my future wife, Maggie, and he was talking to them out in the parking lot, and they were going to go out for drinks. And so she said that my wife, Maggie, said that she didn't want to be the third wheel. She didn't want to be, you know, just, you know, hanging out with
mm-hmm.
the couple.
I don't think anybody wants to be a third wheel.
No, no. So anyway, he said, well, you know, let me, I know a guy. I think he's just getting off work, and he's a nice guy, and he's not married or anything, but the only thing is he has white hair. And they kind of chuckled and thought that was a big joke, you know. So anyway, he came back into the station, and I was in the locker room just getting ready to leave. And he told me, and I said, you know, I'm so tired. I don't want to go. I just want to go home. I just want to go, you know, get some rest. And he goes, no, no. I said, well, have a good time. And I said, no, you know what? I've seen people that you set guys up with. And I said, I don't want anything part of this. And he says, no, no, you got to do it. Do me a favor. And I said, well, look, if she's ugly, I'm going to tell her she's ugly, and I'm going to walk away.
Okay.
So he says, okay. So we go out to the car, and here's, you know, this girl that she's 5'11", and she's got a halter top, a leather halter top on, and it's got fringe and beads and feathers and stuff hanging off of it.
Oh my God, Grandma!
and bell bottom pants, and she's got a, you know, midriff and everything else, midriff showing, and she looked like a, you know, like a hippie out of the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And very, very pretty, long, she had long straight hair down to her butt. And she looked like a, you know, the Southern California girl. And I said, I looked in the car, and she, I said, well, okay, this will work. I'll go on this date. And she looked over at me, and she goes, oh my God, he does have white hair. So anyway, we went out and had a couple of drinks, and my friend and his girlfriend, they kind of went off their, in their own direction, and I said, well, I'll take you back to your car, back at the police station where we were at. And I said, but on the way, I said, you know, I really want to show you my parrot. I've got a pet parrot in my apartment.
Was that Lola?
Huh?
Was that Lola?
No, this was Chump.
I think I've heard about him.
So anyway, she was a little nervous about that. She didn't want to go up to the apartment and stuff. So I said, look, I'll park my truck in the driveway. I'll leave the engine running, and I'll just go up and open the door. And you can see him when you open the door. And when I open the door, he'll start screaming, and he'll hang upside down in the cage, and he'll grab onto the curtain and swing back and forth on the curtain.
Oh my gosh, sounds more like a monkey than a bird.
Yes. And so anyway, I did. I opened the door. The engine was running in the car. She looked inside, and there was the bird in there. And the bird was squawking and swinging back and forth on the curtain and hanging off of the cage and everything else. And so we kind of laughed about it. I took her back to my truck, and then took her back to the police station and dropped her off. And about 3 days later, we went on our first official date at a restaurant and had brunch.
Wow. So if it wasn't through your friend, you wouldn't
have
met Grandma.
It was a blind date, completely off the wall kind of thing, and it was just, you know, the two people at the right place at the right time.
How long did you talk to him after that?
The guy?
Yeah.
We were friends for, you know, we weren't buddies, but we knew each other. I stayed at West LA Station for about another 6 months, and then I transferred down to South LA.
Mm-hmm.
And worked down there. Maggie and I, you know, we started dating. We've been together for, right now it's almost 43 years.
Wow.
So this is my first, last, and only marriage, and her first, last, and only marriage, and that's it.
That's special.
That's special.
Where'd you guys get married?
Where?
Yeah.
We got married at St. John's Church in Inglewood, California. It's a Catholic church, and it was the church that Maggie grew up in, my wife grew up in.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, just a couple miles from her house, and it was a Catholic church, and we had a bunch of my friends and a bunch of her friends, and I wore a white tuxedo with a top hat and a white cane.
Oh my gosh, I need to see these pictures later.
And her mom got really upset at me because my adopted father and I played football in the parking lot of the church before the wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And so she was very upset with me because she thought I was going to be dirty or trip and fall. And
oh my gosh.
So anyway, that was that.
That's really special. I need to see his pictures, though. I need to see the pictures.
Yeah.
And then when you first found out Grandma was pregnant with, was it my dad and Aunt Maureen?
Yep.
How are you feeling about that?
Well, you know, that was, we hadn't been dating that long. And it was just one of those things, and Maggie wasn't feeling good. And I said, well, why don't you go to the doctor? She said, well, I don't have any insurance or anything like that. It's expensive. I said, well, don't worry about that. If you're sick, I'll take you to the doctor. And took her to the doctor and found out that she was pregnant.
Gosh.
And so she came out of the doctor's office, and she was, tears were rolling out of her eyes. And
happy or sad?
She was kind of... She was more afraid than anything else.
Yeah.
And it was a big shock, and her lower lip was quivering, and she was crying, and she came over and she said she's pregnant, and I said, well, what do you want to do? Do you want to get married? And she said, you would do that? Get married? I said, yeah, we'll get married. And so she said, okay, and that was that. And we have been together ever since. And she was pregnant with your dad and your Aunt Maureen.
And then was Uncle Patrick planned?
No, not really. It was just one of those things. About 2 years later, your dad and Maureen were born in June of 76. And about 2 years later, July of 78, Patrick popped out. And we were already living out in Chino at the time, because after the, just before the twins were born, Michael and Maureen, your dad Maureen, we moved from Huntington Beach, California, out to Chino, California,
mm-hmm.
And we had a bigger house and more room for kids to grow up and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So about 2 years later, Patrick was born, and we stayed there for 18 years.
Dang. When did you guys move into the house you're living in right now?
We moved in there in December of 1995.
So they were about how old? Or had they left already?
Well, Michael, Maureen, and Patrick were still, they were still living at home, basically. Michael, Maureen, your dad, Maureen, moved up to Santa Barbara with us. Patrick wanted to stay in Chino so that he could finish his last year of high school.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, that's what he did. And he lived with your great-grandfather and your great-grandmother,
mm-hmm.
until he graduated. But we moved in December, and my daughter, Maureen, got in a traffic accident when she was 19, and it was in February 10th,
mm-hmm.
And she was a passenger in the car. Her boyfriend was driving. They were driving back from the San Diego Zoo back up to Santa Barbara, and he fell asleep at the wheel at 5:15 in the afternoon. And lost control of the car. The car overturned about five or six times. He broke his arm, and my daughter ended up with severe brain injuries. She went to the hospital. She passed away on the 16th of February. So she was in the hospital for 6 days. And then 6 days after that was her funeral. Patrick stayed. Your Uncle Patrick stayed at Maggie's parents' house, or your great-grandmother's house,
mm-hmm.
Until Patrick graduated. Then he moved up to Santa Barbara. And the accident happened in February. Michael, your dad, wanted to join the Marine Corps right away. And
yeah.
We told him that we wanted him to finish the semester at junior college. So that's what he did. He finished the semester and then went in the Marine Corps. And he was doing really well in junior college. He was never picked up a javelin before in his life, and went to the state, was like second or third in the state throwing a javelin in his first year in junior college.
Wow.
So.
Was he a straight A student?
No. No. Michael wasn't a good student, student. He learned a lot about the subjects that interested him, and the other things he just he didn't do as well in.
Yeah.
He wasn't a dummy, but he wasn't the brightest kid in his high school class.
Uh-huh.
So he was a average student at the stuff that he didn't care for,
okay.
But he did well with the stuff that he did. And his twin sister Maureen was the same way. But we always kept them very interested and very active in athletic stuff and in karate. Your dad played football and basketball, and was a green belt in karate. And then Maureen was in track and volleyball, and she did tap and ballet for a little while, but she ended up going into karate, and she fought 5 times at the International Karate Championships and won. She was actually on ESPN, one of the features on ESPN in one of the fights that she fought. A girl that was about 6'2", and she beat the snot out of her.
Sounds a lot like what Mary is doing, and then I hear she looks a lot like her.
Mary is, if you held up a picture of Maureen when she was 11 years old, you'd have trouble picking her out from Mary.
Wow.
And the same thing when Maggie was a girl. There's pictures of your grandmother that Mary looks exactly like her. Tall, thin, long legs, just a pretty face, smiles, and always in a good mood.
I wish I had those genes. Let's see. I don't know. Is there any stories back then when they were around our age that stand out to you?
Well, our kids were always, if there was one of them someplace, the other two were probably not too far away. And it's not that they were all, tied together all the time, but they always knew where each other was, and they were always sticking up for each other. It didn't happen very often. Your dad, Maureen, and Maureen was very social when she was, had a lot of friends and everything else, so did your dad. And because Patrick was, kind of tagging along in there, he had a lot of the same friends. So everybody got along pretty well. But one day, Patrick was going to get in a fight after school. And your grandma went to pick the kids up. Michael and Maureen came out, and they got in the car. And one of their friends came running up and said, Patrick's gonna get in a fight. And Michael and Maureen said, Where's he at? And they said, back by the corner of the gym. So before Maggie could even say anything, before your grandma could say anything, your dad and your aunt were out of the car, and they're yelling to each other, I'm going around to the left side, I'll go to the right side.
Oh my gosh.
And so they came, they came around the corner just as the fight was about to begin, and the kid looked over and saw Michael and Maureen, and all three of the kids were in karate, and they were all really good fighters, and so the kid said, if I got to fight you, do I have to fight both of them? And Patrick said, well, no, but then Michael and Maureen says, yeah. And so that kind of ended the fight before it really even began.
Mm-hmm.
They always stuck up for each other, and they didn't get in any real. They did get in a couple of fights at school, but it wasn't anything bad, and they weren't the ones that started it. So I always felt good about it.
They were like the Three Musketeers.
They pretty much were. They had their differences, just like kids always do.
Mm-hmm.
They had their little, jealousies, but we always did everything the same. If one got something, the other two got something. So we always tried to be as fair and everything as possible, and always gave them every opportunity that we could. If one of them was going to be in a sport, then we had either the same sport or another sport or something that they can be involved in, or if they, you know, whatever it was, if one of them got a bicycle, all three of them got a bicycle.
Yeah.
There wasn't any anybody that got more than the other one did.
So it was really equal. What was one of your favorite things to do with them?
Well, let me see, with the boys, with your dad and your Uncle Patrick, the favorite thing was probably hunting and fishing.
Mm-hmm. It's still a passion.
Yeah, it's still a passion for all three of us. We would go fishing out in the ocean. Michael was more of a hunter. Your dad was more of a hunter than,
mm-hmm.
And Patrick is more of a fisherman, but they both like to do both things.
Yeah.
And that continues to this day. You know, and now we go, you know, deep sea fishing and, you know, catch, you know, 200-pound tuna and things like that. With my daughter, it was, I love to go see her fighting karate tournaments. She was awesome. She would, like I said, she fought a one woman who was, you know, 6 foot tall and just,
wow.
You know, really big and muscular and just, you know, cleaned her clock on ESPN. That was pretty impressive to see. We would go to a practice or whatever, and one guy was 6 foot six, and he was matched up against my daughter, Maureen, and she was, you know, she was 5'7", you know, maybe 120, 115 pounds, more like 115, and he was, you know, he was using the length of his legs to really hit her hard with kicks, and was hitting her with kicks and, you know, knocking her back 4 or 5 feet at a time, but she was blocking the kicks. But so she didn't really, get a point against her. And so finally she had enough of that, and I told her, get on the inside, don't let him use his legs. And when she did, she came up and she did uppercuts and straight punches and hooks into his ribs, and broke one of his ribs.
Dang.
So she was not one to mess with. She had a lot of patience, and she had a lot of took the time to teach kids and help out with the younger kids and stuff like that. She was real patient with them, but she didn't back down from anything if somebody else threw something at her.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what I enjoyed with her the most. But all three of them, they had a lot of similar interests. And Maureen would go fishing with me, and she would have a blast, and the boys would go hunting and fishing, and they did karate, and everybody had a good time.
I saw the picture. We saw the picture downstairs by the front door, so of all of you guys wearing black belts.
Yeah, they weren't black belts. The picture is kind of deceiving, the lighting or whatever, but Maureen was a brown belt. Michael and Patrick were green belts.
Mm-hmm.
I was a third degree brown belt, and your grandma was a green belt also. Your grandma fought in the internationals, and
wow.
She got second place in the women's division.
Dang.
Yeah.
Wow, girl power.
And your dad, and we had so many karate trophies in our house. We had to put them in our attic. When we moved, we put them out on the front lawn. And they were touching each other, and they literally filled the lawn, the front lawn.
Wow.
There were that many trophies with the three of them.
I remember when you brought over some of his stuff, we were going through the garage, we found some of it. There was just boxes of trophies.
We would go, and sometimes we'd do two tournaments a weekend.
What?
One on Saturday and one on Sunday. And
back
when,
to back.
And that was they were getting trophies when it was, you know, you got a trophy for first, second, and third. It wasn't like everybody got a trophy.
Mm-hmm.
They were getting first, second, and third trophies every tournament that they went to.
I'd hate to be one of their school bullies. Have they ever beaten anyone up kind of in that situation?
You know, I don't know anything that your dad really had a problem with. Michael and Patrick got in a big fight one day at our house, and I came home from work, Michael was about 16 and maybe 15, but he was, he was probably 6'2 at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And Patrick was probably 6 foot at the time, and he was probably 14. But anyway, they got in a fight. They had punched each other pretty good, and so I told them that you guys are at an age and a size, and with enough knowledge that if you hit people, things are going to break, and you can't do this anymore to your brother. That was the last time that they ever fought against each other. And I don't know of any time that Michael got in a big fight, but Maureen, she had broken up with her boyfriend, and she was home one day, and three girls came over. And one of the girls was going out with her old boyfriend. And this one girl came over, and she was like a toughie at the school. She was a gang member.
Okay.
And she came over, and with her two girlfriends, they pounded on the door, and Maureen answered. She was home by herself. And the girls, there was a few words exchanged, and the girls tried to push her way into the house. And Maureen unloaded on him and broke one of his nose.
Oof.
And all three of them went running off and jumped in the car and drove away. Well, when your grandma and I came home, there was a blood trail from the front door all the way down the sidewalk to the front of the house, to the garage, and then down the driveway to the street. And it looked like somebody literally poured like a pitcher of water all the way down there. And so we said, what happened? And, the initial lie was that a dog got his foot caught in the door.
Oh,
and,
my God.
And, then ran away. But there were no paw prints or nothing like this. These were drops of blood. And so anyway, after a couple of questions, Maureen kind of broke down, started crying, and told us what happened. And it ended up to be a nothing. The girls had to, the girl suffered through her broken nose, and that was the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
But Maureen stood up for herself, and that was the only time I think that she really got into a fight where she had to really work at it. One time at school, one kid was trying to bully her, and he knew that she took karate, and he pushed her a couple times and said some things to her, and so she finally had enough of it, and she stepped back and gave him a kick to the stomach, and he crumbled up like a like a sack of potatoes and fell on the ground and was crying and everything else. And after that, she was kind of the hero of the school for a while.
Mm-hmm. And then we only have time for about one more question, which I think. What was it like living along with Grandma after they moved out to now?
We had a lot of fun together. We got to go a few places. We went to Ireland, and we went to we went a few other places. But when we moved from Santa Barbara, California, to Frisco, Texas, because of both the company that we worked for, both my wife and I, moved to Texas. So when we moved out here, we bought a bigger house in Frisco. Shortly after we moved in, Michael got out of the Marine Corps, and you and your mom and Michael moved into our house. And then Patrick got out of the Air Force, And he got married while, or he was still dating somebody. Or no, they were married. Him and his wife moved in, and my father-in-law died, and so my mother-in-law ended up moving in with us. So we had, you know, you and your mom and dad, Patrick and his wife, and then my mother-in-law, and Maggie and I all living in the same house. And that lasted for, with your mom and dad and Patrick and Jenny, about 6 or about 8 months. And then then your mom and dad, you know, got a house. And Michael, your dad got on the police department. And shortly after that, Patrick got a job on at Plano Fire Department as a firefighter paramedic. And my mother-in-law has lived with us up until about a year and a half ago. She lived with us for 13 years, something like that. 13 years. And we finally had to put her in a residential care home. Mm-hmm. So for the last year and a half, your grandma and I have lived together, and it's been a great time. We've had a great time enjoying each other's company, and we're together all the time. The only time that we're ever separated is when I go on an extended fishing trip, like a 2-week fishing trip, or if I go out for a day or two or a week on a shooting match. So I just shot the world championships, pistol caliber carbine world championships in Missouri, and grandma stayed with Uncle Patrick and his wife and their new baby. I went and shot the match, came back, picked up grandma, and then we came over here to visit you.
What place did you get?
Ninth place.
That's still pretty amazing for the world championship.
It was a good match. It was a lot of fun. Really good shooters there.
That's like, wow, congratulations.
Well, thank you.
And then, yeah, that's it. Because we're at
only
3 minutes.
What about you? Anything about you?
About me?
Mm-hmm.
Since just around now?
Mm-hmm.
Just like anything happening now?
I think there was some question of what do I think of you and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah. What are you proud of where I am right now?
I'm proud. First of all, your grandmother and I have loved you ever since the first time we saw you.
Mm-hmm.
We love you up until this very minute and for as many minutes as, you know, after that. We're very proud of your artistic abilities. We're, you know, continually impressed by that. And we wish you all the best, and we want to see you do the very best. And we want to see you live to your full potential.
Mm-hmm.
And we love you very much.
Yeah. Okay. That's about it. Thank you.
And
so
that's
much.
All I have to say.
Thank you so much for letting me do this.
It was my pleasure, and I'm honored that you asked me.
I learned a lot about you and your side of the family, even just like out of interview when we were going over some questions. It's because before I knew like little to nothing, and you guys were always just the mystery side of the family. Because I knew some stuff about my mom's side, but I didn't know much about your side besides what my dad told me, which wasn't very much. But yeah.
Well, we love you, all the dear for you, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm.
Okay.
Are you sure you want to admit yes?